Hello, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. I would like to officially welcome you all to episode 19, where today I will be talking about autism and social media. Now, since the mid-1990s, when the first social media sites launched, no one had any idea of the monumental popularity that social media would gain. Today, social media plays a huge role in getting the word about autism out, especially from autistic content creators like my next guest. My next guest is an actress, comedian, and social media influencer who is never afraid and or shy of talking about anything and everything autism. She's here to share her journey to becoming a prominent social media sensation and her quest to making autism more widespread and prevailing in today's mainstream media. Please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Rebecca Faith Quinn. Rebecca, welcome. Listen, I gotta tell you, I have been excited for you to come on this podcast for a minute just because of our known connection through a theater company that we are going to get into momentarily.
Yes, but yes.
I think you are a great representation of autistic content creators in today's society trying to be more vocal about what the world really needs to better understand about autism. So when I have guests come on to this podcast, I usually like to start by asking, when were you first diagnosed autistic? When did you first find out that you were autistic? And what was your reaction to all of it?
Okay, so it's a little bit of a loaded answer. So my mom always knew that something was wrong with me. Not wrong, because being autistic isn't wrong. But she knew that I was different than my sisters. My mom... I have five sisters. There's six of us. By the time I popped out, I had three older ones, which even though I am second to youngest, the math is not going to math for some people. We adopted one later in life who is my older sister. But anyways, by the time I was born, my mom had dealt with three other infants and she also ran a daycare. So she was very familiar with children. And when it came to me, she could literally sit me in front of the TV at 6 months old. And as long as Barney was on, I was hyper-focused on the TV, like completely hyper-focused. And that's not normal for baby development.
Yeah.
Most babies at 6 months do not have that focus capability. It's not uncommon in autistic children, however. But this was 1994, where the term Asperger's had literally only just been put into the DSM, which is what we now know as level one autism. So autism in general wasn't really heard of at the time, but my mom did understand that that was different because she was just like, you know what? She's quiet for half an hour, but that's real weird. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah.
So she started taking me to specialist after specialist. And by the time I was 5 years old, I was diagnosed with ADHD, but that still never fully fit because like it explained some of my weirdness because I do have ADHD, but it didn't explain everything. And I am honestly like 99% sure that the doctor who diagnosed me with ADHD also knew that I met the diagnostic criteria for autism, specifically because the way I was diagnosed with ADHD, they actually did scan my neural, like my brainwaves or something like that. Listen, I was 5 years old. I didn't know the technical terms for the machines that they were using. I just know that they put me in a funny hat and I saw the lines squiggle when I did things, but they put me in the hat and that was like filled with wires. And they were like, so we need you to sit still for as long as possible. And I was a 5 year old just going, dude, I'm fucking five.
Exactly. How are you going to stand still at 5 years old?
Yeah. But, you know, studies showed that autistic people very often do have different brain waves, like our brain, because, you know, autism is a neurodevelopmental disability. It affects the brain on every level. And so for me personally, like looking back on that, I'm like, you totally knew I was autistic. Why the fuck didn't you diagnose me?
Yeah.
I'm 99% sure it is because I was a girl and autism was still so heavily stigmatized. But like I said, so my ADHD diagnosis did not cover all of my weirdness. And I was constantly facing social isolation when I was in elementary school and middle school, to the point where my mom actually tried to hold me back multiple times because she could tell that I was developmentally not where the other kids were. But unfortunately, because I fit the criteria for hyperlexia, which is also very common in autistic people, where which means that I was already reading at a college grade reading level at third grade. Like in third grade, I am very serious. In third grade, I was reading things like Jurassic Park, which is, you know, the novel, like the Michael Crichton novel, which most people will tell you is not an easy read even as an adult. And then like in sixth grade, I was reading things like a Gone with the Wind and stuff like that. And it was, you know, because I had high test scores, they were just like, no, she's too smart to leave her behind. Let's just like, it'll sort itself out. She'll just, if they bully her enough, she'll be normal. Didn't work. And so when I was 14, that was when it was very apparent that the social and school difficulties that I was having were not going away. They were just not. My mom tried homeschooling me for 2 years before that, and she thought maybe that would fix it. No, didn't work. So when it's an interesting story, I got, I skipped class one day with a friend. We were just sitting in the hallway, and a security guard immediately caught us and was like, what are you doing? And I, because I'm autistic, I answered it literally. And I was like, we're skipping class. And my friend was like, why would you tell him that? And I was like, he asked.
Well, I mean, what else is there to say?
Right? Like, it's what I was doing. So naturally, I got in trouble for that. And I went to the guidance counselor. And the guidance counselor just, I think she had like a tism sense or something. Mm-hmm. Because instead of like punishing me, she just had this approach of like, why were you skipping class? And I was just like, because nothing makes sense to me. Nothing works. I can't figure anything out. And so she was just like, all right, we're gonna talk about this for the next year and a half. And so over the next year, I was going again from specialist to specialist, just like when I was five. Oh my and God. Because the way that it works in my county for getting an autism diagnosis is they take you to as many specialists as possible to rule out everything else before autism. And at the time, there were very few people who were legally allowed to diagnose people with autism. You had to like really be a specialist. Yeah. But when I did get to that specialist, he diagnosed me in 5 minutes. In 5 minutes! Like he looked at my chart, looked at me sitting there, and I was just like rocking and just like staring at the ceiling. And he goes, yeah, she's autistic.
Right then and there on the spot.
Yeah, he was like, I'm really shocked that it was missed because she's very obviously autistic.
That's incredible. My goodness gracious. So you had the whole journey just growing up autistic right there. I love the fact, though, that you just knew right away that something was up. You know, because it took me years to figure out what was going on. Even though I was diagnosed at such a young age, my parents wanted me to try to fit me in regular school to a point where, yes, I did get held back. So
honestly, like, there is no shame for parents who hold back their autistic children. Like, or at least in my book, there shouldn't be shame.
Yeah.
Because if it benefits their child be held back, do it. Because again, autism literally is neurodevelopmental delays. Like that's one of the core aspects of autism. So we do develop, our brains do develop at a different pace than our non-autistic peers. And if that means that your child is not emotionally ready for the next grade, hold them back. It doesn't make your child a failure. It just means you're setting them up for the best success possible.
Exactly. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't understand at the time, but now looking back, I'm like, thank God I was held back, to be honest, because it helped me be successful in the long run. So social media has really exploded with different platforms over the last two decades. And now more than ever, autistic content creators are becoming more prevalent now than ever. Tell me a little bit about what got you started into becoming an influencer.
Accidents. actually, no. In actuality, it was spite. So It was a lot of things. I never intended to be an influencer. I never cared really about social media. Oh, wow. I was never really a social media person. Like, looking back on my, because I have a private Instagram account, which was my original Instagram mm-hmm. account that I lost the password for, but that I eventually got back. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep that as my private one. And just, that's just for friends and family and stuff like that, which I rarely post on there anyways, but still. So I never really set out to be an influencer. And that's really apparent in the things that I used to post on Instagram. It was just like, you know, a random breakfast picture, just a random selfie that I thought looked nice. I was just a yep. person existing online. But I was in theater school. I was getting my BFA, my Bachelor's of Fine Arts in mm-hmm. acting. And in my last couple of semesters, I started working on a script for a short film called A Simple Date, ASD, which was all about an autistic girl going on a date. And it was something I was extremely passionate about making and producing. And by the time I graduated college, I was set. I had a director. I was like, you know what? Let's do this. We're going to direct this. We're going to produce this ourselves. We're going to do what we have to do. And then the pandemic hit.
Oh my God.
And it ruined everything for everyone. Mm-hmm. So we were delayed in the time that we were going to start the shooting process. And during that time, I saw a stream of Twitter responses, because that was back when I was on Twitter, and I'm going to still call it Twitter, because if Elon can dead name his daughter, I'm going to dead name his website.
Hey.
Anyways, I saw this string of Twitter threads of people sharing TikToks of autistic women accusing them of faking their autism, even though they were talking and sharing actual autistic experiences that match up with autism. And so I got really, really pissed off about that. And here's the thing. This is notable. I used to make fun of people who had TikTok before the pandemic. I was very anti-TikTok. It makes me laugh literally every year it comes up on my Facebook timeline. But I literally shared this one post that was like, I may have done a lot of cringy things in my lifetime, but never have I ever made a TikTok. It gets funnier every year, honestly.
Especially with the amount of followers that just begin to follow you.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? And so, because I saw all those Twitter responses, I got on TikTok and I made my first video. And it was a video called Things Autistic Girls Are Sick of Hearing. And it was just me reenacting like all of these things and my responses to it, because I was so fed up. Because all of the things that they were saying were things that I've been hearing ever since I got my diagnosis at 15. Like, people constantly telling me, you don't look autistic. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I left it in my other pants. Let me get it for you. Like, I don't know what you want me to do with that. And like, people going, oh, you know, I understand your autism because my father's brother's cousin's former roommate is autistic. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so much of that. And then that video wound up getting like 3,000 views, which that doesn't sound like a lot in comparison to the views I get now, but I had no followers at the time. And within a month and a half, I went up to 20,000 followers.
Oh.
And it just kept growing and growing and growing. And so, like, by the time it got to 50,000, I was like, okay, I guess I'm an influencer now.
Wow. So you had a fast, literally rise.
Mm-hmm. And then it stagnated for like 3 years. But the good news is that social media presence actually helped me boost the Kickstarter campaign, or GoFundMe campaign, I think we used, for my short film. Mm-hmm. And it funded my short film. And I was able to release Simple Date on YouTube. It is absolutely free for people to watch. And I still am very proud of that to this day. I'm actually trying to work on turning it into a pilot for a series. So.
I love it. Expand it onto something even more amazing and even more bigger than what you mm-hmm. have. I like the fact that you considered even becoming a social media influencer an accident. And it's kind of funny when you think about where this country was almost 5 years ago, not even knowing that we were about to go into a pandemic and life was going to shut down literally within just like that. So it's kind of crazy. So I have some statistics right here. So you have 44.2K subscribers on YouTube. You have 134K followers on Instagram. And you have
Actually, it's 135 as of yesterday.
Oh, okay. I love that. Well, then 135 then. And then you also have 333.6K followers on TikTok, which is incredible. Now, with social media, as something as I've learned throughout the last few years, as much as there is positive attention, there also could be the downside of negative attention.
Oh, God, yes.
So how do you stay above the downs of being well-recognizable while staying true to yourself and, honestly, in my opinion, making a positive impact?
That is a very hard question to answer because the negative attention frequently gets to me. Frequently. I know a lot of people will say things like, oh, well, don't read the comments. Don't respond.
Yeah.
I'm getting better about not responding, but I think there's always probably going to be a part of me that reads the comments just because I think that there is value in listening to different people, different opinions. I never want to echo chamber myself. And I try my hardest to listen to people who are discussing things in good faith. And they do that in my comment section. And, you know, sometimes people correct me when I'm wrong. And I'm a person who likes to be corrected when they're wrong, because acknowledging you're wrong to something is the first step to being kind of right about something. And that's just the way that I live my life. So, but that also leaves me open to seeing all of the negative comments that I get. And I get a lot of them. And it really, really gets to me. Like a year and a half ago, I even wound up doing this thing where I started putting away a dollar of my money, my own money. That's very important to the story. I started putting away a dollar of my own money into a savings account so that I could spend it on a trip to Disney World, because Disneyland parks are one of my special interests.
Yes.
I'm obsessed. I know every single bit of history there is to know about the parks because they are, I can't explain why I'm so heavily attached to them.
I'm a Disneyland freak too, so I get it.
Yeah. And so I started doing that and I posted about doing it and I started like trying to use that as a way of like fighting back against the negativity that I was receiving and turning it into something positive for myself. And I kept posting that I was doing this. So like occasionally I would respond to comments and be like, thank you for your comment. Because of you, I'm now like this much more away from my goal. And the thing is, I was also at the same time, and this was the reason I started doing it, going viral in a negative way with the wrong side of Instagram for a feminist post that I made, where people were saying the most violent things about me and to me, things that I don't want to share on the podcast because I don't want to trigger anyone. But that was what started it. And in the first day, I put away like something like $200 or something like that into my savings account. And it was $1 for every hate comment. Just one single, that's how many hate comments I received in that first day. And I posted about that. I posted like, hey, and I was trying to show people like, hey, this is how many hate comments I get in a day. And this is common for autistic people.
Yes.
And people interpreted that as me crowdfunding a vacation. And they got so upset that I was crowdfunding a vacation. And I was like, but I'm not crowdfunding a vacation. I've been very clear that this is my money. That this is my money I'm spending.
Not the money that
I'm not asking. Yeah, because I had a job at the time. Like I had a full-time job as a content creator and I had a part-time job as a social media manager for a nonprofit. So I was like, I'm just putting away my own money. I'm not asking anyone for anything. And literally that post went so negatively viral. I've received comments about it for weeks. Negative comments, people telling me that, you know, like I was whining and I was a baby and I was crying for attention and that I was sinister for crowdfunding a vacation. And I was like, I literally was just using my own money, and people will just never understand that. They'll never accept an opposing view of what they've already determined to be the truth. And things like that still happen to me. And it does still get to me. I'm trying to get to the point where it happens less and less.
Yes.
But like, it got so bad like 2 weeks ago-ish, I had one of those things happen again. And I literally for a day shut, like I deleted my account for a day. Like, I completely deleted my Instagram, and I was just like, I'm not doing that. Because even though I have less followers on Instagram than I do on TikTok, I get drastically more visibility there because of just the way the Instagram algorithm works. And it still happens. I wish I could say, like, oh, I have this advice to rise above it, to like fix it, to not be affected by it. But the truth is, for some of us, it's always going to affect us. And it's not about stopping it from affecting you, but learning how to manage yourself when you are affected.
Yeah.
Like the radical acceptance of knowing, hey, this may always affect me, but that doesn't mean it has to consume me entirely. And absolutely. I'm trying to get to that point. That's where I'm trying to get to.
Honestly, just from your answer, I think you're doing a fantastic job at it. I honestly
thank
do.
You.
I will just say this, just from knowing you in real life, you are very honest about a lot of things.
I try to.
Especially try with to your life. And something that I think people really need to realize is that it is social media. Like, give it a break. You know, you don't have to come at these negative comments and just be like, well, you're this and you're that. And it's like, no, let someone have their chance to say what they want to say. It is coming from their own personal perspective. It is coming from their own personal place. And that's what is super important. And I think what you post is actually incredibly valid, especially this current year and in these current past years where autism is becoming a lot more prevalent, and the comments and talking about it is super important. I really applaud you for even being at the forefront of that movement, just because it's super important and we need to get more autistic content creators out there like you, so that people will know more about it. Now, in addition to being a social media sensation, you are also a hilarious actress and stand-up comedian who is unfiltered and, like the title of this podcast, completely unapologetic. What types of topics do you bring up in your comedy? I've heard some of your comedy before, and I gotta tell you, it is hilarious. If you guys have not
heard
of stand-up comedy, you will be dying in your seats.
Thank you. I try and be as honest in my comedy as possible. And I just try to talk about things that are happening in my life. Like, some of my favorite jokes actually wound up becoming my brand. Like the one where I call myself an autistic bimbo.
Oh my
God. That just wound up being my social media brand now. So, like, I even sell shirts with some of my jokes on them, and people actually buy them. I'm shocked that other people identify with it, but I'm like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's do this movement. Autistic bimbos unite. It's gonna sound awful. I just do a lot of really stupid things in my life, and like, I'm in a constant competition with myself to fuck up my life as much as possible, and I'm always both winning and losing, but that just winds up fueling my stand-up. Like, at one point I hired a trainer for my dog because she was going to be a service dog, but she does not meet the emotional capabilities in order to be a service dog, so therefore she was fired, and she is now just living here rent free like a leech, not contributing to anything. But I hired a trainer for her when she was going to be my service dog. The trainer was telling me how to train her, and he goes, so what you're supposed to do is give her a command, and then when she does it, you say good and repeat the name of the command. Yeah. And then you reward her with a treat. And he looks at me and he said, give her a command. And so I did what he said, and I did it the way he said. And he goes, good job, command. And then he gives me a fist bump. And I was like, oh my God, this man is not training my dog. He is training me like he is training my dog, which means I'm not smarter than my dog, but she's a puppy. She's gonna get smarter. I'm already an adult. What happens when she gets smarter than me?
Oh my goodness, that's brilliant.
Luckily, my dog is just as smart as I am, which is not very, but at least she won't be smarter than me.
Oh my goodness, that is... that's awesome. I gotta say, I was there the night you were talking about the autistic bimbo comment, and it was so unbelievably hilarious. We both belong to a theater group, like I said at the beginning of this podcast. We're gonna get to in a few questions. And it was funny because she was talking about, you know, being an autistic bimbo, And then she says that her mom is in the audience. And I kid you not, I was laughing my butt off because I'm just like, that takes balls to
say. Oh, no, that wasn't even about the bimbo. That wasn't even about the bimbo joke. That was about the joke where I mentioned that, because that joke. This is going to be bad. This is bad. So many people know, I'm not ashamed of it, but many people know I do make spicy content on OnlyFans. So I make jokes about that in my stand-up. And my joke said, for those wondering, yes, my parents know what I do for a living. My mom says it makes me a whore, and my dad says it makes me just like my mother. And she was in the audience that night. She had no idea that joke was coming, but she thought it was hilarious.
Hey, if mom approves, then that's honestly all that matters. That's all that matters. I could never say anything about doing that in front of my own parents. They would literally disown me for life. Just saying. Which, by the way, mom and dad, I do not do any of that. Just saying.
Wink. I'm kidding.
You are just one of many autistic actors and comedians that are beginning to take over the entertainment industry. Now, it's obvious that, and it's been evident for years, that autistic roles have been primarily played by non-autistic actors. And now we see a turning of the page in terms of autistic workers getting hired, working, and most of all, getting paid. How does it play a part of this movement?
It's honestly frustrating. Really frustrating a lot of times, because there are just so many people who push back on the movement for the sole reason of they like the actors who are playing them. And I'm like, okay, just because an actor is going to sound a little counterintuitive, but just hear me out, viewers. So the act of taking a role that was supposed to be for a disabled performer, the act of taking that role, which thus excludes the disabled performer, it is in and of itself ableist. The act of putting on a disability to play pretend or for any reason like that is in and of itself ableist. That is just a fact. However, that doesn't mean that when I criticize these things, I'm saying that these actors are a bad person. Mm-hmm. We all are ableist in some way, either internalized ableism from those of us who do experience ableism and internalize it, or we are outwardly ableist. That is not synonymous with bad person. That is synonymous with blind spots that we need to work on. Because being a human and being a good human, which I think that most people inherently try to be, that's just the way I have to exist in this world. I have to believe that most humans want to be good. And if you want to be good, you have to constantly strive to be better. It is a lifelong journey that we will always be on. So when people tell you that something is directly harming them, it's not your place to just say, well, I don't care because I like it. And it's just, that's one of the most frustrating aspects of it. People also assume that that means that I automatically dislike the films that are being played. And that's just not true. The Accountant is actually one of my favorite movies about autism, even though Ben Affleck is not an autistic person, or at least isn't. If he is, he is not open about it. Which also, misconception about this movement, people think that this would force people to disclose their autism in order to get a part. That's just not true, because if you don't want to disclose your autism, you don't have to audition for that part.
Yeah.
You don't have to accept it. We're not saying, like, you have to be autistic, like, you have to be open about your disability, you have to prove yourself, and it's like, that's not true. There are just plenty of actors who are already open about their autism for you to consider instead of somebody who does not want to be open about it. But anyways, like, The Accountant is one of my favorite movies about autism of all time. It's still an ableist performance, but it is a good performance. Two things can be true at once, and people... I find it very interesting that autistic people struggle with black and white thinking so much, and non-autistic people act like they don't, but they struggle with black and white thinking almost as much as we do.
Yeah, that's something that I could not agree more about, just because I don't think that people fully realize that we all can struggle with black and white thinking.
Yeah.
Which is something that people don't even realize or comprehend, which is super important. And honestly, I really appreciate your perspective on the fact that being a part of this movement can be frustrating, because obviously there's a lot of opinions out there. And unfortunately, you know, opinions could obviously translate to something like, oh, I don't like this movie, when in reality, that's not it at all. So I really appreciate that input, because I think that it's incredibly important to really listen to more autistic stories coming from autistic people.
Yeah. And on top of that, I don't think enough people understand you're allowed to like things that are problematic.
Yes.
You are allowed to like them. No one can stop you from liking them, and you can't stop yourself. The question is, are you willing to acknowledge those problems, the things that they contribute to, in order to ask filmmakers to do better? Mm. I have plenty of problematic things that I like.
Yes.
That were made in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to acknowledge that those things are problematic, and I still like them. You know, there are plenty of comedies from like the 80s that I find absolutely hilarious, but I am willing to acknowledge those problematic aspects, and I'm willing to say, like, hey, you know, let the 80s stay in the 80s. Let the past stay in the past. Do better tomorrow.
Exactly. Let the past in the past and do better in the future, which I think is really important. But currently, moving back into the present, I would love to talk about this performance opportunity that both of us are currently a part of. In case of those of you that are living under a rock, Epic Players is a neurodiverse theater performing arts company in New York City that just opened a branch here in Los Angeles. Rebecca and I are both inaugural members of its LA branch, and we debuted
in
June with a cabaret showcase in Hollywood. We just wrapped up another showcase, this time 90s themed, this past Tuesday.
Yes.
We are heading into a new year full of new cabaret showcases and a possible theater production in 2025. What inspired you to try out for Epic, and what's been your favorite part about Epic Players so far?
So I had had an agent since 2020, so about 4 years. I was represented by a talent agent. I was receiving auditions, and I was never booking. Mm. I'm an openly autistic actor who can't book roles for autistic performers, specifically because I exist in that weird nebulous state where I am too neurotypical appearing to be perceived as an autistic person, but yet too autistic to appear as a neurotypical one. Mm-hmm. And that's a very complicated space to be in. And it leads to a lot of sad nights where you're just like, God, what is it, me? Am I the problem? And it's like, it's the industry. The industry is not ready for the variety of the autism spectrum. They still want a very stereotypical presentation of autism. And that's just because progress moves slowly. So when I saw Epic, I was like, you know what? This is an opportunity to try really hard, because I've seen the work that they did in New York. I actually contacted Epic back in 2020, the really? New York branch. Yes, I did, because I was told about it. I was casting my short film, Simple Date, and even though my main character, Rachel, goes on a date with somebody who is not autistic, I actually thought it might be fun to try and have an autistic actor perform a non-autistic person.
Oh.
And so I contacted Epic to see if they had anyone in LA. They did not, because they were still in New York at the time. And so I was just like, okay, well, that sucks. And I did wind up going with a non-autistic actor, mostly because it was the pandemic. So my resources for finding autistic performers at the time were very, very limited. And the ones that I did contact were busy. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go with Mr. Singleton over here. That's the person who plays my love interest in the film. Oh, yeah, because I don't know if I mentioned this. I starred in the short film. Not only did I write it, but I starred in it. It was directed by my friend Tamia Young, who is a very amazing and talented director.
That's fantastic. You know, it's interesting. I did not hear about Epic at all until...
Really?
The fundraiser about a year ago. I had went with a mutual friend, with a friend who had a friend that was in the New York branch. And I thought, you know, oh, this is kind of a cool, you know, theater group. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Somehow my contact information got over to Epic Players, and I get an email from them I think a week later, like, we like you to come in and audition. And I'm just like, are you sure you're talking to the right person? I haven't performed in almost a decade since college.
Okay, let me just say for Devin's listeners, if you have not heard Devin sing, you are missing out.
That's so sweet.
This man is a very talented singer, as was extremely evident in our 90s cabaret that we just had.
Thank you. I mean, I was also experiencing stage fright getting back into it after all this time. So I went in and I auditioned, and then literally I got an email the week later being like, you're in. I'm like, wait, that was fast? Like, holy moly. And I think what has been so amazing, I mean, we both have been with Epic since its initial debut in March here in LA. And what I love about where we are right now with Epic is that it has exploded. Literally, I mean, we went from an entire group of 14 people to now 28. And I have a really strong feeling that we're going to only further and grow and grow and grow. But it's so exciting because for those who were in the last two showcases, there was so much unbelievable talent. Like, if you guys heard Rebecca can sing Heart Shaped Box by Nirvana with that crisp, raspy Kurt Cobain voice, you know that Hollywood needs to step it up in terms of finding natural talent.
Thank you.
I gotta say. My last question is this for you, Rebecca. As I mentioned, and as we talked about earlier, the entertainment industry is working on becoming more inclusive to autistic actors, comedians, and a lot other neurodiverse actors. What do you wish to say to the entertainment industry in terms of being more inclusive? I know you have a lot to say, which I definitely encourage you to do so. And what are tips or pieces of advice that you have for other inspiring autistic actors, comedians, or social media influencers who want to break into this industry?
The thing that I would like to say to the entertainment industry is consultants are no longer enough. It is not enough to just have a disability consultant to be on set to guide you what disability looks like. That's not enough anymore. You need to cast disabled people because there is not a single non-disabled person on the planet who could play a disabled person better than somebody with lived experience. And me saying that does not mean that I think all disabled actors are great actors. I mean, bad actors are going to come in every group, and not every person is right for every role, even if it is disabled, you know, just because I'm autistic doesn't mean that I'm right for a Rain Man remake, you know, even though that movie should never be remade. But if it was, if it was remade, I still would not be the right choice for a film with somebody with higher support needs, that significant of support needs with their autism. And just because you don't think we can do it doesn't mean you shouldn't try. And to autistic people who would like to break into the industry, write for yourself. Write what you know. Create your own work and keep pushing. I haven't had the success that some actors and performers and filmmakers have had yet. I will get there one day. And the reason I will get there one day is because I am stubborn as hell and I will find any back door into this industry that I can. They cannot keep me out. And if you are a disabled performer who wants to be a disabled performer and wants to find that success, they can't keep you out either. Yep. You just gotta find a way and find a coalition with other disabled performers who can support you during that time. Because if we build a community of filmmakers, it will grow. Yes. And there will be no way they can stop us.
That's right. Wise words from Rebecca, you guys. I can't say it enough. You are so unapologetic and you are so incredibly intelligent of knowing your way in an industry that has had its doors literally shut neurodiversity spaces for so long. And what I love about you is that you are literally kicking down those doors with every single ounce of any body part that there is.
I'm less of kicking down the doors as much as I am taking a sledgehammer to these walls.
Hey, even better, even better. I gotta say.
Because I want to make sure that they won't be able to shut the doors behind me for anyone else.
Yes.
I want to I'm gonna make a new doorway with no doors.
I love that. I love that because one thing is for sure, you are definitely not the last. That is 100%.
Exactly. And no matter what work I do for advocacy for disabled performers, I am never gonna see how far it goes, but the people after me will. And I hope I make it an easier path for them to go. It's like that Barbie quote, like, yes. I love the Barbie movie, but it's like, we mothers stand still so that we can, so our daughters can see how far we've come. And I know that even just doing what I am now, I am doing that.
Yes.
I'm helping other people see how far we will have come.
And you definitely are doing that 100% for sure. My sincerest thanks to Rebecca Faith Quinn for her amazing input. Make sure to check out her hilarious takes on everything autism related on her social media accounts.
Thank you.
If you like what you heard on this episode and you want to hear other episodes or stay tuned for future ones, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I'll see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.